Okay, I am Western Carolina University Master's of Entrepreneurship student Bill Miller here on June 6, 2012, and I'm looking to gain insights on commercial lending by interviewing two commercial bankers who combine to have a wealth of experience. George Madden is a senior vice president of SunTrust Bank and has been a commercial banker since 1978, specializing in giving clients accessibility, responsiveness, and results in their banking relationship. His colleague, Daryl Griffith, is a vice president and commercial relationship manager at SunTrust Bank and has over a decade of experience working with business owners, including new ventures. We are doing this interview in person and recording it with an audio recorder. Okay, gentlemen, are you ready to begin?
Ready.
All right. Mr. Madden, please describe what you do for SunTrust and for your clients.
What I do, Bill, it's the same job that Daryl has. It's called a commercial banking relationship manager. So I work exclusively with commercial bank clients. In other words, I don't work with individuals or consumer banking or home loans or anything like that, but strictly with business owners and their companies. And the way that SunTrust identifies the market is such that Daryl and I each have a specific segment. The segment I work in is companies that have annual revenues greater than $5 million. So it's not the smallest of the small businesses, but it's kind of what you might call small to medium-sized businesses. So on a daily basis, what I do for the bank is basically two things. One, keeping the existing book of clients that I have banking with SunTrust happy and keeping their business at SunTrust, and then just trying to expand that with whatever they need for as their business grows. And then the other half of what I do on a daily basis is look for more commercial accounts, more clients to bring into the bank, and just increase the amount of business I'm doing in that segment of the market.
Okay, what's a typical work day like for you?
It could vary from, a lot of it's responding to emails, answering the phone, solving, small client service issues. Part of my role in the bank with my clients is to be their primary point of contact for anything they need at the bank. So if they've got some kind of an issue, if they see an error on a statement, or they have a question about their loan, or if they need to open a new account or something, I'm the person they call for all of that. Of course, I've got other people within the bank that I'll call on for assistance in getting things actually accomplished. But usually, the first point of contact would be I'll get an email or I'll get a phone call. So I'm dealing with those things during the day. Also going out to visit with clients. I was in Orlando today, meeting with the client and introducing him to a person from another part of our bank that deals with foreign exchange transactions, because this client happens to, in his business, do a lot of international transactions, buying merchandise overseas, shipping it to his buyers who are in other countries. So he deals with euros from time to time or British pounds. So I was introducing him to another person from the bank. So we were meeting with him to do that. Later on today, I was meeting with another client who had a need to increase their line of credit to finance a purchase of inventory items they need to bring in for their business. So I was sitting down with them and going over the terms of a loan that we recently approved for them to accomplish that. So. And then other than that, I was making some phone calls today to prospective clients, trying to get appointments, trying to get introductions, trying to get to meet with them. And prior to doing that, I spend a fair amount of time on a regular basis just doing research of the market, looking for companies that might fit the profile of what it is that I do with SunTrust, and companies that can use our services, whether it's credit, loans and lines of credit, or just deposit accounts or retirement accounts or card services, credit cards and purchasing cards and processing of credit card payments. All of the above we provide for our clients. So I'm involved with trying to find opportunities to do that kind of business with companies that are out there in the marketplace.
Something interesting you said that I hadn't really anticipated. It sounds like you do research and do you actually cold call prospective clients?
Yes.
Interesting.
We all say that the cold calling is like the least effective way to get to meet people. The most effective way is to get an introduction. But you can't always get an introduction. You might come across a company and you say, you know, that looks like an interesting business. You look at their website, you do a little research with different online sources, and you say, I'd really like to meet these people. But then the next problem is finding someone that you know that can make the introduction. So if you're able to do that, you're a step ahead of the game. If not, then you're down to cold calling. So you dial the phone, you ask for the person you need to see, or maybe you send a letter and follow up with the phone call, you know, just whatever method might work.
Interesting. All right, Mr. Griffith, please describe what you do both for SunTrust and for your clients.
Okay, similar to George, I work with business owners as well and business clients. And the difference being that, like George said, my range is that I work with clients with annual revenues from $1 million to $5 million. And for the clients, I'm the single point of contact for everything they need, including their loans and lines, which most people think of when they think of a banker, they think of loans and lines of credit. But we do a lot more too as well in terms of helping clients with their cash flow. One of the big things that I do is help clients collect their money in terms of setting them up with technology, for examples. For example, ACH, which allows you to a client to go into someone's account and pull the money, like for a gym membership, you know, how they do an automatic payment from your account. So we help a small business get set up with the technology they need to do things like that. Also, merchant services. I have a merchant service rep that I work with, so it allows a business owner to start accepting credit cards. And also 401k plans, we have a team that I bring out to help them establish the 401k plan, and also the whole spectrum of everything that a small business will need, I'm basically their one point of contact, and I introduce them to all the resources at the bank to facilitate it for them.
So you kind of do it all then?
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever the client needs.
Whatever they need. But I have a team that does it, really. So I'm really the person that makes the introduction in it. So they don't have to dial 10,000 different 1-800 numbers. They can just call me, and I'll be the one who will facilitate the introductions for them.
You might say that Daryl and I are kind of functioning like a quarterback for a team of bankers to help the client relationship along, and we just sort of bring in the other members of the team as appropriate.
Exactly. And my day is similar to George's in terms of that. I have a portfolio of about 100 business clients that I work with, all in that segment from $1 to $5 million, and help them out with all their needs. So I spend a large portion of the day servicing those clients and helping them with various things that come up, whether it's buying a commercial property, expanding their business, discussing strategy, and I also spend a fair amount of time to prospecting for additional clients to bring those clients into the bank, to Bank of SunTrust, to bring their deposits and their loan relationships over to us as well.
That's one thing, Bill, that I've seen over the years that you might find interesting is that when I first started in banking, it was pretty much you stayed in the office and you waited for someone to come in and ask for something. Today, because of the competition in the banking industry, it's much more of a sales-focused operation. And you know, Daryl and I and other people like us are very actively involved in, as you said, cold calling, prospecting, looking for introductions. We're out there looking for business, not waiting for the business to come and find us. That's been one of the biggest changes I've seen in the industry over the years.
Interesting. Okay, so if somebody with an early stage business walks into SunTrust, who's he going to get referred to? Probably Mr. Griffith first, right?
If they walk in first, it depends on what they're looking to do, because we do have, like I work with the segment from $1 million to $5 million. George worked with $5 million and above, and we have our branch managers work with people who are below $1 million, but they usually call me in to help advise that client, because as we were discussing before, that for a client who's starting up a new venture, it's really important that they have experience in the field that they want to do. For example, if it's a plumber who's been a plumber for 10 years and is going out on his own, that's someone we'll definitely take a look at and advise on how we can assist them in helping them get their business off the ground. If it's someone who's never done the business before and it's just a very good idea, it'll be very hard for us to finance that person because there's no track record in that business.
All right, well, speaking of financing, what are the must-haves for you guys to grant a commercial loan? What components must an entrepreneur have if you guys are going to fund them?
The ability to repay is the number one issue.
Got it.
Well, we call it cash flow in the industry, but it's really the ability to service that debt and still be able to maintain your daily obligations. So we do a simple math where we take the income of a client and divide it out by the debt, and we come out with a number. For us, it's 1.5%. 1.5. So for every dollar of debt you have, we want you to have basically $1.50 of income coming in to be able to cover it. And the next thing that's crucial is credit. Because in this day and age, when you don't know everyone individually, your credit score is really your character.
Okay.
So we use that as the character test to know that if you're making your payments now to the obligations that you have, we feel strongly that you'll also do the same with us.
So you guys assess the 4 C's.
Yeah, exactly. Credit, definitely.
Sure. Right, and the strongest component of that for personal assessment is the person's credit report.
Correct. Correct.
Okay, so those are the must-have components. What do you also like to see to feel more comfortable when granting a loan?
That Daryl mentioned earlier, we'd like to see someone who has direct experience in that line of business if they're looking to get started with something. For an existing business that's looking for a loan, a lot of it is about their track record and their operating history. And a company that has a history of sales that are increasing on a regular basis, profit margins that are stable or growing, net income, a positive net income where they're definitely making more money on the bottom line each year. Those are the kind of things we like to see. So, some earnings momentum, some positive trends in the business helps a lot. Liquidity of the business and the owner, if they don't have any kind of cash reserves or some kind of liquid investments, sort of stashed away as a cushion, that's kind of a red flag. So the more liquidity that the owner has or the business has, then the better the bank will feel about that. Just kind of the strength of the balance sheet, we look at that pretty critically. We look at the composition of the assets. How many assets are there in relation to the liabilities? We don't want them to be out of balance where there's more liabilities than assets in the business. So we definitely want more assets and liabilities, and the greater that the difference is and the greater the company's net worth is, from an accounting standpoint, and that's also a positive factor and increases the ability of a company to borrow.
So obviously early stage ventures aren't always able to have all the strengths that you guys are looking for. So what are some of the alternatives that you guys can suggest, and do you ever refer them to angel investors?
For new ventures, sometimes we do what's called SBA lending, Small Business Administration, because they have more lenient standards for some things. So what I do is that I look at those clients and I see if they can pass the muster test for the SBA, and I'll partner with someone internally who works with nothing else but SBA loans. And from there, then I'll see if they can get approved for an SBA loan if they need financing. Angel investors are pretty hard to come by for non-tech related businesses. So for people who are starting out, I might refer them to a SCORE sometimes, or also to the UCF incubator, business incubator, and allows them to give them counseling and coach them along, getting themselves in a position where they can get bank financing.
I think most of the research, and you might know this better than I do, Bill, but I think most of the research on new business startups has shown that it's typically the entrepreneur's own money or family type resources, friends, relatives.
Correct.
That seems to be, or credit cards.
Credit
a lot
cards
of people
too,
get
yeah.
a business started using their own credit card, which is a risky strategy,
yeah.
but it's accessible to a lot of people, and they tend to do that. So traditional bank financing for startup businesses has never really been a big source of financing. It's usually some of those other factors.
Right. You guys want to see an established revenue stream before you help them further their business for
right.
the most part.
A lot of...
Which is understandable.
Yeah, a lot of lending has to do with trying to assess risk. and measure the ability of the bank to get repaid. And if you think about, you know, an entrepreneur putting his own money in, or friends or relatives investing, well, they're investing their own money by definition. In a bank loan, we're investing money that really belongs to our depositors, you know, to our clients who have a checking account or a money market account or a CD in the bank. That's their money we're lending out. And the government is looking over our shoulder, and they want to make sure that we're being prudent in the kind of loans that we make, because we're loaning out those deposits, and those deposits are guaranteed by the FDIC. So therefore, we just can't take the kind of risk with those dollars that an entrepreneur or a family or a friend can kind of roll the dice if they choose to with money that's coming out of their own pocket, because we're not really loaning the bank's money. We're loaning money that belongs to depositors.
Very good. Very interesting. Okay, so I read that you once helped a client back in 1985 who had previously been turned down by every bank in town, and he wound up becoming a successful entrepreneur. And I'm wondering if you recall why you chose to give him a loan when no other bank would.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, we talked earlier about that specific case, and I remember it very well. It was kind of early in my career and hadn't made that many loans yet, so maybe that's why I remembered it more. But it was a young man who wanted to start a donut shop, and he did not have experience in that business. But what he did have was his father was willing to help back him on his loan request. And his father was a successful businessman in his own right. So, you know, maybe there's some genealogy there, father and son. And his father was willing to kind of help mentor his son in getting the business up and running. And most importantly, he was willing to sign as a guarantor on the loan along with his son. And the father's business income was such that he could have afforded to pay the loan back that we made to the donut shop, even if the donut shop turned out to be unsuccessful. But in fact, it turned out to be successful. They operated it for a number of years and sold it, and it's still in business today under different ownership, what, you know, 25, 27 years later.
Good, very good. Let's see here. Well, how about, Mr. Madden, I also read that you have some knowledge about beginning and expanding sales to foreign buyers. Please share a bit about how you can help your clients in that regard.
That kind of gets back to the team of bankers approach, Bill, that we take, because I'm not specifically an expert in those transactions, but I can talk to a client who, you know, maybe wants to expand by shipping merchandise overseas, or they need help with handling payments in a foreign currency. So at that point, I'll bring in someone from the appropriate part of the bank. In particular, we've got an area in Orlando that we call Global Trade Solutions, and we've got a specialist there named Cindy Flores, and she can help people. There are various federal government programs. One of them is called the Ex-Im Bank, stands for Export-Import Bank, and so they offer some programs to help banks back up a loan to a business that wants to engage in international trade. As you can imagine, if you own a business and you sell a product and you ship it to Spain and your buyer is in Spain, well, there's more risk in that transaction than there is if you ship your product to Georgia. You know, the collectability can be very difficult if the Spanish company chooses not to pay you back. So the Ex-Im Bank will actually provide a guarantee or insurance of those receivables from foreign buyers. So that's something that SunTrust is involved with to help put the company in touch, you know, with the right people to take advantage of those kind of programs to get insurance or receivables or guarantees of direct loans to help them access foreign markets. So that's where we can be of service.
Interesting. I would think that online entities like credit cards and PayPal and such that people can pay online and you can receive that payment in advance before shipping a product to Spain. I would think right. That would help alleviate some of the stress there as far as needing to get paid from a foreign entity.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what happens a lot. A lot of the clients I work with, they end up saying that, you know, they ship overseas, but only after they've been paid. And that does take the risk out, obviously.
And there's still a risk associated with getting paid like that online, though, in terms of that. Sometimes it's credit card fraud. And a client might get paid by credit card, and ship something out, but then a couple of days later, it's credit card fraud, so all the funds are taken immediately out of their account by the Visa or MasterCard. So that's a big risk when it comes to shipping overseas, too, as well, to unknown people, though. I've had companies who've experienced that, too, as well. So it's not that easy with just credit cards. When as soon as you cross the U.S. borders, it's almost like the Wild Wild West in terms of getting paid.
I hadn't thought about that. Interesting. Okay, so here's a really open-ended question for you guys. What are some of the challenges that you face as commercial bankers?
Right now, Bill, I think the biggest challenge is the economy. You know, it's been kind of, you know, in a trough now for over 3 years, and what I repeatedly encounter with my clients is they are just so uncertain about the future. They're just kind of not willing to take the kind of risks they normally would take in better economic times. So I've seen a definite fall off in demand for loans from my clients, in their willingness to borrow, their willingness to make that commitment and, you know, take out a loan. And they're just kind of all waiting and seeing, you know, when does the economy make a turn, when do things get better, and so they get more active again. So I think the difficult economy is a key challenge. That, and I think another one is just competition, you know, the sheer number of banks that are out there. And Florida is a very desirable market for banks from out of state and even out of the country, and you've seen the proliferation of different bank names throughout Florida over the, you know, the last 10, 20 years, and there's just so much competition out there that you've got to be on your toes to keep your clients happy.
Interesting. Have you guys noticed some emerging trends in commercial banking that might be helpful for entrepreneurs to be aware of?
Some of that electronic stuff you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, emerging trends in commercial banking, I'd say, is in terms of just giving clients multiple access to being able to pay you. Before, it was only looked at for very big companies to do things electronically, but now even a small company, we consider $1 million plus small, that they have to do, and they have to be able to do everything that a big company like a Walmart or a Microsoft can do in order, because clients have been trained now to be able to access funds or to make payments any which way possible. So some clients want to pay by checks, some clients want to pay by you taking the money out of your checking account, some want to pay by credit cards, some want to pay by cash. So you have to be able to meet the demands of the marketplace. And we help a small company seem like a big company by giving them access to technology and making it very inexpensive for them to give them that access to as well. So you have to wear many hats as an entrepreneur and be willing to embrace technology. Even though you're, especially for people in the second generation of a business, I noticed, they like to continue what the first generation did, but you really have to embrace technology, even if you're someone just like doing sod and laying down sod, which is a low-tech business. You still have to be able to have everything online. You still have to be able to take payments online. You still have to be able to do everything that a very big company can do.
Okay. Okay, so speaking of entrepreneurs, I imagine that you've both learned a lot about entrepreneurs over the years, and what skills in particular do you think entrepreneurs need to have in order to be successful?
I'd say tenacity. the ability to, you know, go through something and fail and still try it again. And also, with tenacity comes to, because with entrepreneurs, it's also, you're in charge of, you're helping families too as well. If you have 10 people working for you, it's 10 families that are relying on you. So I've seen that entrepreneurs really take that to heart. And they also, with taking that to heart, they want to keep these people employed, and it's hard for them to make those decisions when it comes to laying people off quickly to keep the business afloat. And I know entrepreneurs who have stomach ulcers because they're so concerned about meeting payroll.
Right.
So that those are some of the stresses you don't think about. You know, when it's payroll time, they're thinking about, oh man, if I don't pay this my employee, the family doesn't have groceries.
Right.
So it's that tenacity to keep going during the tough times. And also to leverage resources too as well. And it's One thing I see, it's when a business is doing good, they never want to borrow or get or lend money. But it's really the only time you can ever get approved for a loan. So it's also having that strategic viewpoint too, as well, to say that I know things are good right now, but I have to plan for the future. So what can I do now when everything's going very well to put me in a place that if the economy slows down, if everything doesn't look good, what can I do to help me to buffer those type of rough times? So I'd say tenacity and really forward thinking, looking to see what's across the bend, whether it's good opportunity or whether it's the difficult times with the economy too as well.
Bill, if I can chime in a little different slant on that, what I've seen from a lot of people over the years who own and operate a business is their skill set is usually tilted toward, like the side like sales, marketing, or design of their product, making things happen, getting things done. That's how they are. That's how they think. Where I think they're probably not as strong is accounting, internal controls, financial discipline and decision making. So what I've always thought about entrepreneurs is that if you don't have that kind of a strength in terms of financial aspect, make sure you get someone in your business who does. Either a good CPA that you can rely on that will help you with those kind of issues, or a controller or some kind of an internal financial person to help make up for that. Because to me, it's sort of somebody like if I can speak for Daryl or for myself, we're doing what we do because we're not entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. You got to be a risk taker to go out there. You've got to be an idea person to make that work. And so I think those kind of people tend not to be number cruncher kind of people, and right. Focusing on that. So I think you need to surround yourself with that kind of talent to help you be successful with the other half of your brain in running your business.
So if somebody walks into your office and they don't currently have that expertise in their business, do you guys know some local people, local like CPA types that you can refer them to?
Yeah, definitely. We do that a lot. Make introductions, and Daryl and I know a lot of people, whether they're CPAs or just independent financial advisors, and we can make those kind of connections for clients and try to help them in that regard.
Excellent. Okay, I've got one final question. And is there any particular piece of advice that you guys would like to give to aspiring entrepreneurs?
I would just say, do your homework and do some research, do a business plan. I think that's kind of boring.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I love how you emphasize that. So that's a strong component to it.
But again, to me, a lot of times the entrepreneurs, they don't want to do that. They don't want to sit down and do the planning and run the numbers and put it on paper, but you need to do that. I mean, you need to understand what you're getting yourself into, make sure that you have the staying power to stick with it, because the main thing that causes businesses to fail is lack of capital. They just, takes a while to get ramped up and running and get profitable, and if you don't have money to sustain you through that, you can go broke. So I think they need to do their homework and actually do a business plan and bounce their ideas off of friends and relatives, advisors, confidants, and do a lot of thinking and a lot of planning before you take the plunge.
And then when you do your business plan too as well, whatever number you come up with for your revenue, cut it in half.
Yeah.
And whatever number you come up with for your expenses, double it. Because I know business owners have a rosy outlook of what they're going to do, entrepreneurs especially. And when you bring that business plan to someone, bring it to someone that's not a family member as well, because family members always give you a very a good outlook on things. So give it to someone who's impartial.
Like a local score counselor?
Yeah, like a local score counselor would be fantastic. But someone who's impartial and can who doesn't mind hurting your feelings if they don't think the business will work.
One of my instructors made an interesting comment. We're working on developing customized pro forma financials for a business plan, and he said that they're teaching us a very thorough method to really, really put a lot of thought into the assumptions, and then to see how those assumptions affect the sources and uses of cash, and then the balance sheet and the income statement and all that stuff. And he says that once you've gone through the effort to, as much effort as they're requiring us to do, he says, once you've gone through that to develop these pro forma financials, then you're eliminating a lot of the risk in your business. And he says it's actually, he said something to the effect that it's riskier to not start the business at this point. Once you've got that much thought into it, you know the business that well, that your chances of success go up dramatically. So
that's a good point. You know, I would venture that by you doing that and getting into that extent, you've probably done more than a lot of other people have done who actually have gone into business and started one up.
There's a little licorice flavor.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that. It's a slight interruption. I think that pretty much concludes everything. And I thank you both very much for sharing your time and insights.
Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Thank you very much.
I didn't know you guys are on some webcam or something.
No, we have a recording here.
Oh.